Okay, hello everyone. Tomorrow is Tuesday, which also means it is election day. So today we're talking about imperative to vote in elections in halakha. So what is the value of elections? It's basically what the first question that we kind of have to answer. Democracy is not necessarily the government of choice, so to speak, of the Torah, because we really believe in a theocracy, which is a king who is both who heads both religion and also secular matters. Thank you. Life. I couldn't think of the word. So it's not that the king is the end-all be-all of religion, because we also have the Kohanim, we have the priests and the whole people in the temple. It's not that the king does those things, but the king in the end of the day is still the chosen government choice of the Torah. Okay, we could debate exactly what that means, because whether or not they were supposed to ask for a king and why they were punished for asking for a king, even though then it became a halachic imperative to have a king. We can talk about that at a different time or at the end. But I do want to talk about actual democratic voting for today, which we do see within halacha and Jewish communities in a way. So I want to first explore that, which is as follows. The Gemara in Brachos says, "Ein me'amdim parnes al tzibor ele im kem nimlochim b'tzibor." You're not allowed to put someone who's in charge of the Jewish community unless the Jewish community has some sort of say in the matter. So it means that you can't just appoint someone in authority without people having a say, which just basically sounds like representation, voting of some sort. How exactly that happens, I don't exactly know. What do you want?
So
that's, yes. It's Nisha. What's up?
No one's in authority. Does that mean no one can tell me that I'm not Jewish?
No. That's not exactly how it works. I mean, there is an authority. Saying now?
Well, the Jewish community has to have a say if you're Jewish or not, actually. If you want to go like that.
The authority. Only Hashem can tell me.
Well, yes, but you have rabbis who basically are gatekeepers, not gatekeepers, but are basically who are in charge now, who basically tell you whether or not halakha is being kept. But that's not our topic for today, for a different time. So the Tshuvos Chasam Sofer says that that this also applies in terms of putting up the rabbi of the community, that if you're having the rabbi of a whole community, that they also, need to have this, the community members also need to have a say in who is being put up as the rabbi of the community. And the Tshuvos Rush, it says that for problems and for decisions that are community oriented, so larger issues in the community, so there's a rule in Judaism called Acharei Rabim Lahatos, that you go after the majority, basically majority rules. Yes, Judaism came up with that. And the Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch from the Maharam Rutenberg that is what we do, that we do Acharei Rabim Lahatos, that after the majority, which means that you need a majority, which means that people need to have stated their opinion, which means that there's some sort of voting democracy style type thing. And then the Chasam Sofer says even further that if the rabbim, if the majority happens to be tyrannical, so you don't actually need to go after the majority, because then it's no longer democracy. It's people coming over and just being tyrannical. And therefore, you would not have to listen to them. Questions, comments, concerns up until now?
When you say the majority, do you mean like community members, including women and children, or just like, for example, other scholars, or like, what are we talking about? Or I guess that depends on the context.
Yeah, it probably depends on the context of what exactly we're talking about. The general concept in halacha of Acharei Rabim Lahatos is actually done when you talk about two things. First, in halacha, it's talked about with judges. So when you have three judges who are sitting on a court, and you have two going one way and one going the other way, so Acharei Rabim Lahatos, that you go majority rules. And the other time that it's talked about in halacha is also by basar b'chalav, by mixing milk and meat, that if you have a majority, if you have 9 kosher stores in one place, in one township, and you have one non-kosher store, and you find a piece of meat on the street that you don't know where it came from, and it's most likely coming from a kosher place. So the question is are you allowed to rely on the fact that obviously there's a lot more into it, like nowadays with more traveling, like whatever, but would you be allowed to eat that piece of meat? So the halacha is acher rab natas, that you go after the majority, that it's possible that it's most likely coming from that source, and therefore it might be okay. But that's where it comes from. So if you're applying it to this case, you would have to say, what's the context? So again, is it a context of a court system, which then you would be only those who are able to be part of a court system? If it's talking about just putting it up to a general members vote and saying it to everyone, like, oh, what should we do? So then you have a different question. Good?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what? Yeah, go ahead.
I forgot how you say in Hebrew, but what about the case of like 100 rabbis agreeing on the topic? I forgot what it's called.
Okay.
What about if it's 99 to 1 rabbi, it's majority rules? Like rabbi.
So, again, in court cases, like especially about majority rules, which is not our topic today, maybe a different day, there's – depending on the topic, you have to either get unanimous or just majority, meaning it's not a steadfast rule, majority rules no matter what period.
Right.
Sometimes it's not. So we could discuss it a different time, though. Sorry, not our topic for today. I don't want to get too sidetracked. So again, the halacha does say this kind of this quasi idea of like times that one can vote and where majority might rule in cases and where people might get a say. However, it is not written anywhere. If you open up a Shulchan Aruch, which is a code of Jewish law, basically, you will not find anywhere written any statement saying you whether or not someone has an imperative to vote or whether or not it is absolutely asur, whether or not it's prohibited to vote in secular elections. So the question is what do we do? Like what should be? So the biggest thing is that if we're voting, it has to be based on Torah values. And we have to know that it really has to be based on Torah values. So who, like, in the end of the day, is like, do we need to vote? And, like, is there someone that we need to vote for in an election? Or is there, do we need to listen to the Gedolei Yisrael? Do we need to listen to the great rabbis who are telling us this is who you should be voting for? So Rav Menashe Klein, who is a rabbi up in Williamsburg, basically says, is one of the few who say, you shouldn't vote because this is how we separate ourselves from the rest of the world, because someone who is an active member in society basically says that how do you show that you're an active member in society? You go and vote, and therefore, because we still want to be a part of society, but to give ourselves really a separation between secular society and the Jewish community, so you should not be actively involved in voting. However, in the end of the day, even Rav Moshe Klein basically can't end up concluding that it would be prohibited to vote. And he says, for many reasons, you should vote, and that okay, so you might have to make a face about the fact that you need to vote, but all the Gedolim, all the great rabbis in Europe, all voted, so he literally cannot find a real reason why you should prohibit it. Again, we're not sure why you would allow it based on maybe. Based on nations of the world, people liking Jews, making sure that people understand that you're active also. Again, Rav Moshe Klein did not love it. But again, he basically said also that in the end of the day, all exiles are bad, but this is the least bad of all the exiles. And we're in this Medina Shel Chesed, a country that has given the Jews so much good and really, again, is probably the least bad that we've ever had it in Jewish history. And therefore, you should give back. And kind of like Churchill says, Mary Fixman walked in. Is she still here? She walked out. And like Churchill says, that democracy is not necessarily the best system. It has its flaws and it's not perfect, but it's the best one that man has come up with, so to speak, so far to this date. So even though it's not great, but it's the best one that we have right now, so that democracy is good. However, Rav Moshe Klein is kind of a singular opinion here, and most poskim, if not, forget most, almost all poskim rather say that it's really an honor and a privilege to be able to vote in secular elections, and that you should do it whenever possible. So the question is why does someone vote? So there's three reasons why someone would vote in general. It's either to receive, to give, or to make a statement. So let's go through each one. So to get, well, first of all, before I go through, questions, comments, concerns about anything that we've said before? No, lots of concerns. Always lots of concerns. Okay, so we're going to go through these three, to give, to receive, and to make a statement. So to receive, voter candidates or people in the government are always going to give based on voters. Really, they don't really care about the people. They don't care about who is the – they don't care about how many people are in the community. They care about – how many voters are in the community. So if you're not voting, they're not really caring about you, unfortunately. That's just the way that it works because they can't really concentrate on everyone. They have to know who's coming to the polls. So if the Jewish community comes out in droves in a certain district, so then they're going to give resources to those communities who come out in droves to those voters. So if you want to receive resources for your community, so you need to show up to vote. And again, they're going to say, "Oh, look who's the most active? It's the Jews, and therefore we need to serve, make sure that they have the resources that they need because they're going to come vote for us." To give, Rav Moshe in 1984 wrote a tshuva that's not written anywhere in any of his svarim that says that voting is really a form of hakarat hatov, a form of giving thanks and gratitude over back. And he says that we basically live in this Medina Shel Chesed, right? He uses this phrase of a country that has given us so much. And again, the least bad that we have ever been in and a situation that we've ever been in. And that they have done so much for the Jewish community and for Jews that how do you do this gratitude, you give back to the democracy and you strengthen the democracy by participating in elections. So you should participate in elections to strengthen democracy as a form, both as to strengthen, but also as a form of hakarat hatov, of gratitude. And the last one is to make a statement. So when you want to make a statement, we're trying to make a statement about our values. What is our value set? What do Jews believe in? And what do we advocate for? So the reform and conservative communities, especially the more to the left communities, more liberal communities, have made a very strong stance on a concept they call tikkun olam, which means like fixing the world. But they have taken a very liberal stance on what exactly that means. But they've made it very clear that those are the people that they're going to vote with. So therefore, they're going to go that way. There was a story in the 2016 presidential elections that there was in Utah, there was a third party candidate, meaning not Trump, not Clinton, that was running on a independent party ticket. And he won in certain counties a large portion of the Mormon vote. And he was predicted to win second place, I think, over – I think they were predicting Trump, this third party McMullen and then Clinton in Utah in one of the models. And like, that's pretty, I think it was written that it was like the first state in more than 20 years that an independent party would win over either the Democratic or Republican parties. And that's pretty crazy statement to make that you could potentially have a third party advocate, a third party person winning an entire, candidate. So thank you. Winning an entire state, which hasn't happened in many, many years. I think they said winning an entire state, I think might have not happened since George Washington, but at least coming in second place in a state. Yeah. Like an independent party has not won an entire state, I think, in electoral college since Washington. Really? With George Washington? That's cool.
Jackson was the first Democrat, and that was maybe the seventh president.
But so I don't know. Maybe they're Republican. I don't know. We can talk about exactly what the politics are. I just was looking at the research and maybe I misread, but it said like it was been a very long time since the Independent Party won. So you can look it up if you're by your computer. So the key was is that the Mormon community really came together to say like, well, even though like we usually vote Republican and you would expect the Mormon community to vote Republican, that they actually came out to vote in droves and vote for this other guy, McMullen, because he aligned more with their values. So if the Jewish community so too could come out in droves to say, like, we believe certain values are true and therefore the Jewish community is advocating for this person or whatever, so then you have a different story and you could actually potentially make a statement about Judaism and also potentially sway an election. But again, this is to make a statement about the values, our values, and about what Judaism means, and you do that through through the elections. Rav Avigdor Miller once said that he was voting for someone, I forgot exactly who, because they took a very harsh stance on Russia. And so it's a little bit strange. Like, it's not like the USSR was like scaring him in particular. He felt like he needed to do this whole thing against the USSR, but he felt that it was that the fact that Russia as a whole was their kind of religious value was founded on the fact that it should be like no religion and totally against religion, and therefore he felt that that was not a Jewish value and therefore would vote against it. And then if we would all support this one person. So if we were to support one person who was like corrupt, it would not be good for the Jewish people. That would be a Chilul Hashem. And therefore, and it would be very important for us to vote. And again, support a person who is not corrupt should be obvious to say, but I feel like I should say it anyway. And then again, you don't have to love every concept that someone stands, like everyone. You don't have to believe every stance that a person that you vote for believes in, right? There could be someone who has something that goes against Jewish values, but you don't necessarily need to not vote for them, which I was told once in the 10th grade that you're not allowed to vote for someone who goes against Jewish values. And I said, cool, I'm never voting because there's always going to be someone who's going to go against Jewish values. I can tell you that story afterwards for the people who want to stay. But in the end of the day, like, if the Jewish community is coming out in droves to support one candidate, it might be an imperative to say, like, this is why we support this candidate, because this person takes a good stance on Israel, because this person believes in this ideal that the Jewish community believes in. So that way, it's very clear why exactly we're supporting it, not necessarily because we're supporting the other ideals that might conflict with Jewish standards as well. And then the most important thing to do, by the way, is going to be A, to vote, but also to make sure that your voting is L'shem Shemaim, really for the sake of heaven, because you don't want to get into a case of, and there have been rabbis who wrote that if, especially in a rabbinic election, like if you're voting for a rabbi, putting someone else, if you've been bribed off, so then you should not be voting in an election. Same too for secular elections. If you've been bribed, you should not vote in secular elections, and that really the whole point, bribed. If you're being given money to vote for a particular candidate, you should not be voting in the election. And the only thing that you should be doing is to be doing to making sure that you're strengthening democracy, that you're giving back to this country that has given us so much. And that it should also shouldn't come down to personal matters. That, again, we should be voting to strengthen democracy and to go for Jewish values. And maybe we should worry more about Jewish values and strengthening democracy rather than our own personal issues. So maybe like when you're doing like your priority list, like, okay, it's not terrible to say like, well, I personally believe in higher taxes and therefore, or lower taxes and therefore I'm going to vote for this candidate versus that candidate. But really you should look at also what the Jewish values are that you're making sure that this person has, and adding on your personal values maybe as a later in fact. So the biggest key is, again, go out and vote. It's not a halachic imperative, but definitely a good thing to do. And again, through this, that we'll be able to give back to democracy, strengthen democracy, and show the world and America that we're very thankful to be living in a place where we've been given so much, and a place where anti-Semitism has been at an all-time low, except for since October 7th, maybe. And that way, we'll hopefully, again, if you show up with your votes, they'll give back to us and tell us that they'll give more to the Jewish community as well. Have a great day.